thing that I was reading, but I can't find it.
It's all right, you can vaguely talk about it. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome to the Forest School Podcast. We're on number 6, and we're going to talk about a slightly, I guess it's controversial. We're going to talk about fighting and war play in the context of our forest school. That's how I'm going to put the music.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Lots of people have a kind of flat rule of no.
Yeah,
and doesn't happen.
Lots of schools have that, if not all schools that I know. And whether it be through like redirecting, so a kid picks something up and is like, pow, pow, this is a gun, and you know, I've spoken to teachers who have, no, there are no guns here, we don't do that, and like redirect, maybe it's a magic wand, or maybe it's this, you know. Or schools that just have
I guess the question is, can you, in the big question, I guess, is can you do proper forest school if you have a no guns, no fighting, no war rule?
That's an interesting question.
That might be something that work out as we talk about it. But I would say we sort of have, when we're doing sessions in schools, or when we as a company are doing sessions in schools, there's kind of that overarching, okay, we're in the school and we're going to, you know, kowtow to some of their, you know, you have to maintain a status quo. We can't come in and just smash down everything, because it doesn't work. And also, it's so much harder for the kids if you strip away everything they know to then be like, right, we're going to, in 2 hours a week, I'm going to create a respectful relationship that, you know, undoes whatever else. But in the woods, so I think we should talk about what we kind of do in here when we've got complete autonomy over our setting. So we kind of both go, I think we were both very heavily influenced by that the book It's Okay Not to Share. And whether I think for me, I kind of always thought that way, but it took that book to kind of clarify, like, no, yeah, that is why, that is why I think that it should be allowed, and it should be
Do you want to crystallise? Do you want to explain?
Yeah, so I think the reasons for it are there's quite a few, isn't there? There's one that play is how children make sense of the world. So if you're restricting that, then you're restricting the opportunities they have to try and understand the world around them. And that varies in terms of motive, because for some children, like army and war play and all these things are just, they're just pure power and identity. It's that idea that actually war and guns and being in the army all convey these images of power. And so it's very much like, what is it like for me to be the powerful person? If I say I've got the gun, will people, you know, what does that do to people? Does that, you know, and then you start to, particularly with boys, they start to go into, they know what the biggest and best guns are, because it's almost like a top Trumps game. An imaginary top Trumps game of like, oh, well, I've got a bazooka. And they go like, oh, well, you know, all this stuff. So it's just exploring what is it like to have that power.
I was reading something yesterday and it was saying that there's a lot of, in the 80s, a lot of concern about an apparent increase in war play amongst children. And lots of people thought that there was a link between the increase and a thing that happened with advertising on telly where there was a restriction that was lifted, so you could market stuff to kids a lot more explicitly,
like G.I. Joe's, Action Man's, all that kind of thing.
So
that's interesting.
Lots of people who worked with children noticed a huge increase in play that was like, I am G.I. Joe, I am He-Man, lots of superhero play, lots of this stuff. Like, the reason I brought it up was because you were sort of naming gun types and things like that. The worry amongst parents was that media was definitely having a direct impact and influence on children's play and not in a positive way, it was perceived. So that was like a real worry. But I can see why people would be worried by that, but I would say that that kind of play was always there. It just had a name.
Well, that's what's
you know,
my going.
It just has, you know, media gives it names. Media gives them the word bazooka or, you know, all of these different things.
Perhaps
that they associate
that
with G.I. Joe or, you know, more relevant stuff today. But I don't think it encourages it, you know, and all that. There are other studies that have been done, you know, settings that have banned it, and it comes out in other ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, you're not allowed to play at soldiers and you're not allowed to play with guns, but that same thing of power, that same thing of...
We have kids that play wizards,
conflict.
Don't they? And they know all the killing spells from Harry Potter and stuff. So,
why is the... you know, for our adult brains, it looks a lot nicer and it sounds a lot nicer, and it's not actually about real killing, it's about wizards and spells, but the actual intent and the relationships within the game are exactly the same in many ways.
Yeah,
so
why,
you know, why change it? Why make it, why prettify it for our sake? You know?
And I guess it's what I wonder is, as we're getting to a point where children, I'd say, if you look at, say, like 100, 150 year span, children are definitely consuming more. There's more media for children.
Mm.
There's more stuff going on. So like you're saying, the advertising, I think if you could go back and look at play in the First World War, the Second World War, at home, I bet it's war play.
Yeah.
I bet it's
war play.
But I bet it's less specific, and that makes it feel more comfortable. I bet if it's, I've got a gun, that's very different to, I've got an AK-47 with a sight, you know, so...
I don't know, I bet you in the wars it was really specific, because they would be hearing about that stuff.
They would
stuff,
be hearing,
they?
But that's why I wonder whether the amount of information they have made people feel more or less comfortable.
Mm.
Because there is something uncomfortable about hearing a child name the make and model of, like, an assault rifle.
Yeah.
Feels very different to them saying, I've got a big gun, I've got a, you know, I've got a sword, whatever.
But for all that, like, I think because we just straight up allow it, and we tell parents that we allow it, and we have a little card next to the tea and coffee that says, just to let you know, we allow this, this is, and this is why.
It's got a brief reason why.
Yeah. And maybe because we allow it, but I was thinking about it, and we don't actually get very many children that do play in that way. Like, a lot of our day, you know, if the kids are here for all day, a lot of the play, especially in the afternoon, will gravitate towards kind of defending a base or attacking a base and being on teams and strategy and things like that. But the kids, actually, I'd say probably only one child really names, or maybe one or two, and it won't just be like heavy machine guns, it will be like, I've got a katana from Japan, it's a special sword, you know, it's like weapons from across time and cultures, which is, yeah, and I think that's because of the found objects that they use for that, you know, the stick looks like a samurai sword or whatever. But actually, I think I can only speak for our setting and for our children, but I think we allow it, and the initial perhaps burst of, oh, I've got this and I'm going to kill you or whatever, does turn into longer sessions of, strategy, of cooperation, of hiding and seeking.
Traps, making,
So actually, that burst of, like, in inverted commas, like, aggression or violence actually peters out and is extended into a quite different play. Apparently, boys are, excuse me, you mentioned about, like, boy play. And there's definitely a bit of an issue of, like, especially in mainstream schools, kind of quashing that natural kind of boy energy.
We can play like girls, we can't play like boys.
Yeah. And apparently boys, if you look at it, boys do play a lot more of that kind of, like, again, I'm going to put in inverted commas, aggressive play, because it isn't actually aggressive, because it's playing. It's not really, they are never intending to actually hurt someone, or very, you know, in case, unless it overspills.
So I think that's an important thing to kind of clarify, is that we're not here giving the kids a bigger stick and going, go on, have him round the head, go on, it'll you know.
In no way.
So we have all, you know, the same three rules of, you got to look after yourself, you got to look after each other. And so things like, actually, gunplay is a lot safer than sword play, because there's very little physical contact. You're often doing it from a distance, whereas sword play, you have to make contact. But we do, you know, really try and get the kids to empathise, like, not just, okay, they've said stop, so they want the game to stop. With some kids, we've been doing a lot of social skill of, like, well, we kind of dip it in and out, don't we? Of like, can you look at their face? Mm. Even though, because some kids, the screaming no, no, and running away is part of the game.
Yeah.
So you have to look, and it's a really hard skill for kids to get, and it's a really hard skill for adults to get as well. Actually,
it's so tricky
to look past it and go, that kid is screaming and running away, but they've got a little bit of a smile on their face. And when that person does stop, they turn around and they go, no, come on, come on, come on. Which is very different to screaming, curling in a ball. Do you know what I mean? Reading facial expressions. And then, so we try and say to the kids, look, if they stop looking like they're enjoying it, just ask them.
Yeah.
Because they might just be really into that, that imaginative
role play.
Role play, that's the word. Yeah. And so they might just be going, oh yeah, you know, I was crying because I was thinking about my family that I left at home, but when I left for the war or whatever. Yeah. So just a quick, like, are you still enjoying the game? Do you still want to play? And they're like, yeah. And then you go, okay, cool, we can go.
Yeah. And they do become good at that, I'd say.
Yeah.
Definitely. But just going back to what I was saying about girls and boys.
Yep.
So apparently, boys will naturally present a lot of these kind of behaviours, but girls, if you look at sort of aggression and violent inverted commas play, that's more boy focused. But then things like chasing, rescuing, and attacking as a team, that kind of play, is 50-50 girls and boys.
Oh, yeah.
Which our kind of play seems to, that's what happens with our play. And I would say with our group on Tuesdays, it might initially start with the boys starting off this kind of like, oh, this is our base, and no, you're not. And then later, as it becomes more extended and becomes a bit, I don't know, I'm going to say a bit more sophisticated.
Well, it does, doesn't it? Is that
then
thing...
the girls tend to come in at that stage sometimes, I've noticed.
Yeah.
When the sort of initial shouting is sort of petered out.
Well, because we've talked before, haven't we, about how children need, it's like 20 minutes. Well, no, the longer you get, the more sophisticated their play becomes. Mm. And so when you get 12-year-olds sent out to break, quite often the first bit is where there will be some, I'm going to inverted commas, behavioural issues, because they need to play like 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds to get up to where they're 12. So almost like any, it's a bit like doing like a David Attenborough thing, isn't it? Like you go, any group of animals, you put them together, they need to do some sort of pecking order.
Mm.
And I would much rather they did imaginary pecking order of, I know these guns, let's play what it's like. I'm going to... It's almost like... It's almost... You know when like gorillas do like mating... They do aggression displays, don't they? They don't make any contact. They just beat their chests and run around. And that initial gun play is a little bit like that. They don't ever make any physical contact, but they run around and it's almost just showing how aggressive, in commas, you can be.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the group goes... Oh, okay, this is, you know, I'm slightly less than him, slightly more than him. And then, like, you're right, when it progresses to more sophisticated play, then they start to get into more tactics and teams, and then you get some real good social learning of what is it like to be the leader or prepare resources for your team. And
cooperating and turn-taking and delegating and all that stuff that happens, which wouldn't, because I think the initial emergency of the situation then creates that kind of play. Whereas if you didn't have that, if you just said, right, today, guys, we're all going to design a trap, or we're going to design... Now, it just wouldn't be there because the play isn't there. And that's completely
adult-led.
It's
motive, isn't it?
It's motive. It's just like, I really care about this. I really care about my base, because earlier I had a big thing of defending it. And
And I think, so I'm going to go right back to it. So we said one of the things is power and identity, and we've talked, I think, at length about it. And then one of the other big motivations for guns and war play is that making sense of the world, in terms of, I would say, most children have a connection to someone in the forces, particularly here, because we're like, there's a Royal Marines base very near us, and you know, Dartmoor's not far away, and there's lots of training down there. So for lots of children, if they don't... I saw something the other day that said, let's try and raise children who don't have to recover from their childhoods. Which is really, I was like, oh, right, that's a really interesting thing, because lots of adults talk about, oh, I'm still getting over this from my childhood, or actually this has still affected me in this way. And wondering whether those children that are allowed to engage in war play and do that thing of like, oh, Uncle Tom's in the army. I wonder what it's like to be Uncle Tom. And my understanding of empathy for Uncle Tom is strengthened by playing at war games.
Completely. And they say that children who have experienced violent trauma get over that trauma and deal with that trauma.
Not necessarily war trauma either.
No,
just, it could be any kind of...
Yeah, so kids that have been involved in really terrible hostage situations and things, part of their therapy was to play out that situation. And one of them would play the aggressor. And as weird as that seems and as uncomfortable as that makes us feel as adults, that we might instinctively go, oh, no, we're not going to do that.
Don't want to bring it back up. We don't want to do it.
Don't bring that back
up.
You're going to give everybody else nightmares. But actually... them taking on those roles and play acting it out, is that about them gaining control over it?
So, well, adults go to counselling, don't we? And we talk, and they talk about, right, let's actually hash out all the horrible stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Kids need to hash it out through play.
Yeah. But above all, I think as long as a child isn't hurting anybody else or destroying property, what right have we to stop any kind of play, really?
Mm.
And I've read quite a lot of stuff about like repetitive play. And that's quite interesting. I mean, that's probably the subject for another podcast, to be honest, another discussion. But quite a lot of stuff I'm reading about play is sort of, labelling repetitive play as quite a negative thing. And like, how do you get this child out of this cycle of just always playing this way?
They're showing you what they need.
Exactly.
That's always the thing, isn't it?
And like,
they're showing you what they need.
As long as you're there to support and extend when, you know, when necessary or when you feel that the time is right, I don't really see what the problem is with a child...
No.
You know, they need to, and they will eventually naturally stop repeating it because no 35-year-old is still there, you know, waving a stick around their head, you know. But
I don't know, have you been to any like paintball games or anything? It brings out the word.
I just don't think it's our right really to say what's wrong.
I think that is the underlying thing for so much of play, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not hurting you, it's not hurting anyone else, it's not hurting any, I was going to say property, but then I kind of was thinking about the environment, so.
Yeah.
Then does it matter? Does it matter if they're... And I think lots of people get hung up on... So going back to you saying about advertising and it suddenly being children, and the other worry for people is that somehow playing at war will make you more aggressive. So that idea... And we don't do it, you know, when they play Billy Groat's Guff, we don't worry that they're going to decide to live under a bridge.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't go like, oh God, they're playing this again. She's going to decide to grow a beard and horns, you know.
Yeah. I used to work in Hackney and and I was playing with some children, making a short film with them, and they chose to make it about a kind of... There was a kind of space gun battle at one point, and one of the parents was really upset and came and complained to me and said, you know, they live in this really violent place, and we found a gun on our estate, well, not them personally, but there was a gun found on the estate, and the children probably are going to encounter some violence, and I'm really unhappy that you let this happen, and, you know, this is supposed to be a safe place for them. And it was a really difficult situation to deal with because I did empathise with her.
Hmm.
But overall, it goes back to what the children chose to do. And also that I think as adults, sometimes we forget what play in childhood is like. And it's not all innocent and pretty.
Yeah.
That's what we often forget. And I think now where parents do have a lot more control and a lot more supervision over their children than they did when we were young. I mean, if you really think back and remember the times where you were allowed out to play and didn't come back home for a long time, there were some really dark situations a lot of the time. There'd be times where, you know, you'd fall out with your friends, you'd be like miles away from home and you'd be like, oh, I don't really know what to do now. Or like an adult comes and tells you off for like trespassing on their land and you're like really scared, or, you know, all these things happen to me. Or like there's a cow and it's charging at you and you think you're going to die, you know. Or the games that people play, like some children choose to play games that are quite dark, and that is fine, and that's part of life, and that's part of learning. So this whole kind of obsession with like, oh, just play nicely,
it's got to be clean and always look good in photos
and innocent and just like, oh, just like,
I wonder if that
lovely.
Is down to you know, they say that helicopter parenting is one of the most traumatizing things that children have to deal with you know now, and I wonder whether that's true, whether it's just observation bias of the more, you know, it's always happened that, you know, this you know, we've always played war games and stuff, but now we're watching
we
our
see,
children more.
I think you're right.
And so we go, oh, right. God, I feel so much more. Whereas
completely.
You go off into the woods, into the local play parks and whatever, and you play it for hours and you come home.
Yeah.
Again, as long as you've come home, you've not hurt anybody, you've not hurt yourself.
Yeah.
You know, then...
And you probably aren't going to come home after a day by yourself and your friends playing that kind of game and go, Mom, Dad, we played this really horrible game and I was really scared.
Yeah.
You've been through it. You've been through the whole play cycle and you've come out the other end and you just feel nicely tired out and completely fine with it.
Had an experience of I was going to say mild peril.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's that thing, isn't it? Of like, actually, it's a way to experience something risky in a completely safe way.
Yeah.
As long as you trust the people that you're playing with, that they're not going to come and clobber you over the head.
Yep.
And so that's part of what we're trying to build, is that trust of like, you know, these aren't, your peers are not going to hurt you. And if they do, we just talk it through and we come up with a new rule and we say to everybody, oh, okay, how about we don't throw rocks?
Yeah.
We can throw pine cones because they're pretty small and they don't hurt. But should we, you know, and just making it so that then you can experience that, like we say, running away screaming, pretending to cry because you're experiencing, what's it like to be really scared?
Yeah.
And whether the more we watch our children, and I say our children, I mean like, biologically, or, you know, that you have a parenting role over, it doesn't have to be biological. You want your instinct is to not let them experience
completely, and it's
pain
very hard
and
to turn that
suffering
off.
And those things. Yeah. And you go, I want them to be happy all the time, but actually,
that's not the way to make them happy all the time as adults.
No, and they need
it
to be
really
able to do, you know,
and it's very hard, it is very hard,
but actually, that thing of having some sort of it's almost like a foundation, isn't it? For the, if something does happen that puts them in that state of mild peril, like being chased by a cow, which has clearly traumatised you. But if you had up to then practised running away from monsters, you're more comfortable with that feeling of peril.
Oh,
because I experienced it before when it was the big kid from around the corner and we were running away, and then it was dad in a monster suit or whatever, and then, as you know, you sort of learn to deal with, oh, okay, my heart rate goes up and I feel like this and maybe my stomach feels funny. And if it happens to you the first time in an actual danger situation, you're in real trouble.
They say that that is crucial for a successful adulthood in terms of risky play, don't they? That you, if you are experiencing risk of all kinds as a child, then when you get to being an adult, then you're able to deal with the adult type of risk, like, oh, if I do this I might lose my job, or you know, those kind of adult
pressures. Relationships, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's, relationships are a massive thing that we do as adults, and you need to be comfortable going, oh, I'm going to calculate the risks here, and maybe I'm going to, you know, when you're a kid it's physically jump, when you're an adult it's metaphorically jumping, isn't
completely.
It
completely, but it's the same kind of thought process and chemicals that are going on, and it's vital.
It's quite interesting actually, isn't it, that idea that I don't know if you heard that. So your body always responds to stress and anxiety as if it is a physical threat. We're still programmed
like
to
fight, flight.
I need to so. But weirdly, what modern culture tries to do is, if you're stressed, sit still, watch something relaxing. Well, actually, you'd be far better to go for a run, jump around for a minute, get all that, because your body is then just full of adrenaline.
Yeah.
And if you can't get rid of that adrenaline, it just festers into your body. And then I think that's when, for me at least, if I try and relax in that situation, all that adrenaline goes to my brain. And it's almost like I can't spread the energy around my body. So my brain is going to have a million thoughts
Which
now.
Which again is why boys might be having a really hard time in education right now, because that is the way of school, isn't it? It's like, oh, you know, oh, that you're getting a bit overexcited now. Let's all calm down and have some calm time. When in fact, they just need to burn it off.
And well, not even burn it off, but have it involved in the learning. And actually, you think about that excited feeling, and maybe we try and train that excited feeling out of boys, because if they, you know, they start to go, do you know what, I can write this story, I can tell a story in it, and it's got more than three characters in it, I can really, and they get excited. And so physically, I had boys when I was teaching that wanted to jump around when they told you a story, because it was exciting to tell a story. And then some situations you go, or some teachers maybe, or TAs, or, you know, people that work in schools will go, okay, just calm down, we're going to continue writing your story when you're calm, when you're sat down. No, he's going for it. Let him go. We've gone completely off the topic of war and fighting.
Yeah.
War and fighting, they're fine as long as nobody's getting hurt and nothing's getting damaged.
Yes.
Physically or emotionally. I think that's the final word. Cracking. Right. See you later, guys.